Welcome to Thorne's YouTube channel. It's going to be a wild ride.
What about, would you also say, because I also felt like it wasn't just like, look, there were some European teams that went to CPLs that weren't that good, or they were just all right, and as you say, you've beaten some of them, you've even beaten some of the best players. But the actual, like, super-duper really good elite players from Europe, give me a sense, how good were they?
Yeah, I mean, same level as, like, Rambo or Kyle, but just in a different way. I mean, their aim was quick. They had really stable aim, crosshair placement. I mean, I remember because we would, at that CPL, we played a lot of teams in the BYOC. We would just run and play speedball, or we'd play some kind of aim map or something like that. And it was just, it's just a different style. You're just not used. They're just aggressive. They try to run you over. They attack you. They're not scared to peek. And it's always consistent. It's always going to be the same way. Like the first bullet accuracy of a European player, I felt like at the time, was just way better than anything you experienced.
Who was the craziest player do you think you played? Who's the one that really shocked you or impressed you?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. I mean, Elements, and when we played Eolithic, Elements was like really good. I mean, when I watched him play, I mean, he's just a little kid. I mean, you always see these kids,
yeah,
and they're just wrecking people. Yep.
In some ways, that's actually sort of cooler, though, because like, if someone actually looked like Heat, like a big guy, well, in your brain, you think he should be good. But you're right. If it's like a media or Element, like they basically literally look like the nerd from science class, but they're just wrecking everyone, like genius in the mail over. I remember, yeah.
Yeah, Heaton was another crazy one. I remember he played some team he played. I think it was Infinity 4K or Infinity. It was a UK team. 4K, Infinity Esports. I can't remember the name. He played them on Aztec.
Yeah, it's the famous 1v5 round. Yeah.
Yeah, it was 1v5, and I'm just like, it's just stone cold, cold-blooded. Like, it probably helps that when the European teams were just better than the average American team. Like, every European team was probably, you know, Cal Invite level versus people in Cal Invite weren't Cal Invite level. Yes. There were, like, maybe five or six of them, and they just consistently played really good teams. And, yeah, he was ice cold. I saw Potty on land. He was ice cold. I didn't get to play him, like, other than when he played on Eyeballers, when we played at Babbage's CPL. But they're just really good. And they knew the rules too. I remember Syndicate lost to Eyeballers because at the time, like I said, it was, I think you either get to a certain amount of rounds or you play for 30 or 45 minutes. They had won enough rounds on FT that they just camped. I think they camped the roof.
Right. They could run the timeout. Right.
They could run the timeout. So it forced us at CTs. We couldn't just hold the bomb site and we had to come to them and they camped the roof. They knew rules, they knew everything, and they were just ahead sometimes on specific things. Like I remember at they were using config commands, update rate, command rate, that stuff was popular. They just knew about it before we did. We would just turn on Counter-Strike and change sensitivity, and then we would play. They just knew things we didn't know at the time, and then when they come over to a CPL, we'd learn about them. So I think that also made them put an aura on them as well, right? Because I remember at that CPL in 2000, the winter CPL that X3 played at, they told everybody they couldn't use update rates. Everybody had to play default. Yeah. And it was a massive like deal. Yeah. And the funny thing is I did not use rates because I thought it was a cheating. So, and I had said, I go, if they get rid of these rates, you're going to be stuck. You're just not going to be able to play well. And everybody had to turn back and not play. And I only played one game for X3 at that CPL. It was only because Rambo's mouse just wouldn't work.
Oh, right.
And they just had to start the game on cobble. So I just played. And they're like, oh, you got to change your rates. I'm like, I play default. Like, it's not going to bother me. I'm just going to play. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the European players, they just know stuff we didn't know because they were just more dedicated to the game. I mean, there was another player I remember. He was on Team 9, AHL.
Oh, sure.
That dude was like insane. We played a bunch of scrims with them before we played in the tournament. And I felt like I shouldn't have played them because they just wrecked us.
Oh, it killed your confidence.
The prominent, prominent guy that wrecked us. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
Since you referenced some old school names, it's actually cool that you remember, because I have to be careful because people just don't remember names. You remember Trigger. If people don't remember, Trigger and his brother were DOP players. And famously, I remember this detail, I have an insane memory. They were players that had ridiculously high sensitivity. Do you remember this?
Like,
you remember this back in the day. CS, yeah, CS was the game, obviously, where everyone uses the big mouse pad. They were doing the quake shit where their mouse just goes like that, like the wrist's just like that, isn't it? It's like, we're not exaggerating, like an impossible sensitivity, right?
100%, not exaggerating. I remember he used the Razer Boom Slang with like 1600 DPI and like 15 sensitivity. And like, he'd move it. And I'm like, this is unplayable, Trig. It's unplayable. And that's why you never saw Scarface or Trig. You never saw them pick up an op. Not one time you will see them. They probably don't even have an op kill. They probably look at the stats and they don't have an op kill.
They were surprisingly good players, though, considering they're using these this sensitivity. Well, they could have killed people.
Trigger's just insane. It's just insane. I don't understand how anybody with that kind of sensitivity could play. And they were like the best players on the team. And I'm just like, I don't understand. I remember we played them in the earlier CPLs. We played them in the finals of the CPL before Babbage's. And I remember this in my mind because it just cracked me up. And I always mess with them about this is they would always go outside on nuke. And I would always have an op. And every time they came outside, it would kill them. And there was one round because back then we didn't have a tournament area before the big CPLs. You would have a line of computers on one side and a line on the other side. So you would be looking at who you were playing. And I remember that he would just Scarface just called the strat, you know, his brother is like, yeah, go outside, Trig. And he's like, F that, you go outside. and that was the downside of them because they were brothers. They would rag on each other all the time. They were so hard on each other, but super cool guys. Yeah. They're pretty local too. So yeah, Trig just cracked me up, but yeah, the sensitivity 100%. Worse than simple. I mean, simple plays with high sensitivity was probably 2x that.
By the way, one of the things that I always thought was quite interesting was a lot of people from the beginning days we're talking about actually only did like a year or two, and a lot of them bailed, especially when things became more professional. I saw, maybe because you were local, even towards the end, even people won't find these on the wikis, you still used to go to some of the CPLs even when you weren't really playing that on. Were you just playing off and on and you just go to the LANs? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, the CPL with Graz, Razzle and Jaden was the last one where like it was like professional, like that was like the retirement event. And afterwards I went to the CPL after that. We got knocked out on the first round, but we took just friends, the original RS team that played the old schoolers. We took them, but we would just go because like we played games. Like I just liked going and I knew everybody there. It's like, you know, when you're in Counter-Strike, you know, the scene and you've been in it for so long, all your friends are, pretty much from Counter-Strike. I know almost every single guy that
it's
I played
with to hang out
on RS. Yeah, I mean, it's just a cool event. I mean, even when I went to DreamHack, IEM Dallas event, right? I took my kids there to watch it, you know, and then I met a lot of people that had gone before that had played at events, right? I met a guy who said, yeah, I'm talking to Kyle on Discord. I'm like, hey, just message him and call him a scrub or something. Tell him I'm here. So, yeah, I mean, it's cool to go to an event. And I just went. It was close. It's like 20, 30 minutes from my house, like the Hyatt Hotel that we played most of LANs at. 20 minutes from my house. The pre-CPL boot camp, which is usually at like Killer LAN or Lethal Gamers, that was like 10 minutes from my house. So I would just go and either watch or, you know, play with some friends.
By the way, that's actually also one of the things that never used to be very publicized. I know Gottfrag used to eventually show like the results of that like pre-CPL Lethal Gamers LAN, which if people don't know, is like a LAN center that's really close by and was also one of the original places that had the monthly LANs way back in the day. Yeah. And famously, a lot of the Europeans and the Brazilians and stuff would come play that the week before. It's like the warm-up, basically. But even though they'd put the results, and I have to say, if anyone ever saw the results, oftentimes, actually, the teams that got caught onliners with no pressure would win these. Like Rival could win this shit or fucking Tech could win this shit.
Funny that you mentioned Rival, because there's two prominent curses in old school Counter-Strike. One is the Rival curse. I mean, it's, you know, they look amazing, they have amazing West Coast players, they go to the event and they don't even make the top 10, and they have an auto berth to get seeded to where you only have to win one or two games to get into the top 10. So and then they won the pre-CPL boot camp, which is the second curse, which is you win the pre-CPL boot camp, you never win the event. I remember Rival won that one tournament. They got knocked out in the first round to like the worst team I've ever seen. And then we won. It's funny that you say that, because we won because we beat Esports United, Veslan's team, the one we boot camped against. We beat them in that event. And Veslan always complained that, oh, yeah, the only reason y'all won is because the event lasted until 2 a.m. I'm like, you know, Counter-Strike's Counter-Strike. You got to shoot people. And they were just tired. Sure. And they said that we fed them Taco Bell, which made their aim worse because it's dog.
That's a great excuse. Okay.
We took them to Taco Bell. And they said it was dog food. And to make it up to them, we took them to Olive Garden, which is like Olive Garden is, I don't know if you've heard of Olive Garden, but it's just an Italian franchise. It's like the McDonald's of like Italian. We took them there and they said, oh, man, this is 10 steps better than Taco Bell.
Okay.
But we won the pre-CPL boot camp, and that's the event, the last event we played in 2003. So we didn't win the event there, but famously we lost to X3. We lost to them, or 3D, or whoever. I think it was X3 or 3D at the time. 3D at the time. We lost to them on Crane, which is like our worst map. We were just never good on Train. I wish we could ban maps like that. That's like the bane of our existence, is playing like Train, and you would just play random things. And all Veslan always complained about, like, I don't like this table. I don't like this chair. Oh, this computer sucks. Like, they would always complain about it, because I guess, I don't know if Europeans are just used to getting better setups going to wherever they're at. But yeah, that boot camp we had with Veslan, with them and Rival, was hilarious, because Rival was sitting behind us, we were in the middle, and Esports United was in front of us, and we would just rotate through playing games and we would just talk smack to each other. The funny thing is Notorious was on their team, so every time we would kill Notorious, we would just echo the song Notorious B.I.G. We would just be like, nah, nah, Notorious. We would just say that every time, and we'd crack them up. And even better is, like, whenever they would rush, I'm like, okay, like, it'd be real quiet. They wait down time, like, 1 minute. I'm like, I don't know where they're at. I'm like, let's shift around, kind of look for information. I'm like, hold on, let's wait and see if we hear Swedish. They're talking Swedish. They're going to rush. Get ready, guys.
That was the tell.
They're talking Swedish. Yeah.
By the way, were you actually one of the people, did you actually try to, I mean, it sounds like you were, like I said about some of the other group who were a bit elated, were you trying to be like friendly and sort of like get to know the other people from other countries and get to know the, like, the international vibe? Was that something you were into back then?
Yeah. I mean, we were, I mean, RS was always super friendly. We always wanted to talk to the other teams. We always wanted to play them. That was a big thing. Like, I want to play them. I want to see how they play.
Right.
That's like the big thing, because I mean, you didn't really get to scrim a bunch of Europeans unless they came and they played in the BYOC, because they were always either in their hotel room or doing something. But we were just really friendly. We were friends with, like, I mean, remember the first event, we were, we would just chill with the MTW guys, Kraken. Like, it was freaking, there was, at the time it was a straight German team. I remember them because they had a player named Scorp on their team, and he sat closer to his monitor than Yukindar. Like, I'm talking, right. This guy's face was in the monitor. And back then it was, we didn't have 144 hertz monitors. We had like 60 hertz monitors. I'm like, you're going to go blind. Like, it's, you just sat really close. But I remember, because we would always, you know, we would, whenever we played them on land, kind of to warm up and stuff, we would scream Scheiser. We would always scream like just German stuff at them. And Kraken would make fun of us because he would always come up to us and try to do an American accent. And his American accent was basically John Wayne. He would come up to us and be like, I can talk like an American. Like, he would always do stuff like that. But, like, yeah, I mean, we were always friends with them. I mean, even with Veslan and stuff, like, it was cool because we would always just chat about strats and, like, what to do and how things are and stuff. We were always really friendly. RS was never like, don't talk to us. We would always talk to people. And that's just who we were. We weren't, none of the guys were really geeks, right? Like, none of them, right. All of them were just, we were just regular dudes. We all had, like, girlfriends. We would go to events, and we would always say, you know, you need to hit your quota, which is 20 kills. And after 20 kills, go to the movies with your girlfriend or something, right? That was kind of the thing. We were all just laid back. We were friends with everybody.
By the way, this might shock people, but I'm going to guess there was no salary in this team, right?
No salary at all. I mean, the best thing we got is we got free hardware. Laurent had a LAN center inside of a comic book shop called LAN Madness. He would just let us use the LAN center. We'd just play there for free. And then we could use any of the computers that he had. Like, so if somebody needed parts, he could get them. We would get headphones. Plantronics did send us like headsets and stuff at some time, but we just never got any money. We would just go to we would make money to like pay for hotel rooms and go to events by winning like Tango Lands, where it was like first place was like $500, and we win like two of those, or we'd go to another Killer Land or something like that, and we would go. But like, we would pay our own way for most things. Our dream was to basically save our money from all these Tango Lands, these $500, and to buy tickets to go to a European land. That was our thing. We wanted an account. We had a credit card for the team, a Riot Squad credit card, and we had the RS house, which was Laurent's house, and we'd play there. And we wanted to make it to a European event, which we didn't ultimately, but you know, we live our lives through Electric because he did, at least.
Yeah, if people don't know, I think the analogy I would give is, if anyone knows the classic 90s poker movie Rounders, that's what it was like to be in these teams. If you had a local land scene, you just go and you pick up like a 500 or 1,000 there by playing these small lands where it's either like other Cal Invite people, or it's mixed teams, right? It's people that you can beat.
And yeah.
So people don't know. We're just talking about the big CPLs where you might play, I don't know, 4 or 5 or something.
Yeah.
You've probably played like 200 lands or something if we're talking about local lands, right?
Tango was the biggest one. Tangoland was the biggest one. They would hold it like almost monthly. And I would kid Tangoland, Lethal Gamers, Killer Land, all those things. There'd be a bunch of, we would drive to lands. I drove to a land in St. Louis when I left RS. I was in PAG. PAG drove up to St. Louis. It was like a crazy drive. And we ended up playing RS in the finals there. They had Immortal and they had Fatality on that team. We wrecked them or whatever. But we, you know, we went up to New York. We won a WCG qualifier here and we went up to New York. But yeah, I mean, we drove to Louisiana. We played in a Counter-Strike tournament in Louisiana to win an auto berth. And then we joined an Unreal tournament tournament with the CS team and got second place. We defeated the first and number one OGL team and number two OGL team in the tournament. But we lost in the finals because they just knew like an exploit we didn't know about. was instigib capture the flag, which was fine for us because, you know, we played Quake, so it wasn't too hard. But yeah, I mean, we just played tons of lands, tons of local lands. That's why Texas was amazing. That's why I think it helps a lot of the players, a lot of the good players from Texas. They just got all their experience on land. There was a lot of raging too. The lands, you saw a lot of people rage. I remember a lot of things. I mean, I got banned from one of the Tango lands. I got banned from a Tango land and couldn't play with my team at the CPL qualifier because I hit a player from Tau in the face with a keyboard.
Fucking hell.
So it got heated.
Thing is, though, that's another thing people wouldn't realize. Because it wasn't like professional. It was like very much like an amateur hobby type thing back then. Dude, there was loads of people having like fights after tournaments and people getting punched and stuff. Yeah, it was kind of crazy, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was just nothing. You were playing because you competed. You really wanted to win. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, ultimately, like when I had like retired and stopped playing, it was just because I had to go to school. I had to finish college. Right. I couldn't keep dropping glasses. I had a girlfriend. I had to, you know, my parents were putting pressure on me to do things, and there was just no money in it. I mean, I think Dustin alluded to it too. It's like, you're not getting a salary. If you go to the tournaments, you literally have to place top three. And even if you get third place, you're getting 10 grand. If you're getting first place, you're getting 50, unless you go to like one of those good tournaments, like, you know, CPL winner was like 100 or something, or I can't remember like how much it was, but there wasn't as much prize money. And we kind of paved the way for everybody today because it's like way more money, right? You've got stickers. Sure. You've got tournament money, you've got salaries and things of that nature. But yeah, I mean, motivation was a big deal for people because it's like, we need to get a sponsor, we need a land center, we need to play on a team. It's hard to stay motivated unless you really want it to win. You play for the love of the game. That's what they said, for the love of the game.
By the way, since you left like the official like pro part of CS so early, I was actually surprised when I got in contact with you again that you would follow CS now. Was there a big gap in the middle where you never followed it? Did you always keep your eye in? What was that like?
I watched a little bit. Like, I watched through basically the complexity days with Fraud, kind of because, you know, Rambo kind of stayed in the scene. I mean, I just watched Rambo and Rambo and Lectric, basically, just because I knew them. I watched them. I like Counter-Strike. I mean, to this day, I mean, I play CSGO, CS2. I stopped from Source until Go. And then I started in Go and started playing in Go again, just for fun and with friends. But I just like watching it. Like, I like watching, even when I play today, it's just fun when you play a team and you like, you just need to figure out where the gaps are. You need to figure out where people need to go. You know, I mean, obviously the aim is I'm washed, but it's fun. It's fun to watch. I tell, when I took my kids to watch, you know, the Stewie IEM, like, it was insane. Like, the vibe in that arena when you watched it, when Stewie was there, like, you know, I had to tell my kids kind of the story and how it goes. But like, they had other tournaments there, like Overwatch, and like, they just weren't interested in those games. I took them to, my son plays in a team, the Frisco Falcons for XP League. They plays in a team. And we went to that event to watch the Overwatch team because that's what he plays. And he got bored because aesthetically, it's just a hard game to watch.
Oh, for sure.
It's just not very fun. And I took him to the Counter-Strike game, and like in the middle of the game where D2 basically ties it up and goes to overtime, my son's like, I don't know what's happening, but like, this is amazing. Like, this is amazing. And it's just a fun game to watch. It's like, you know, my guilty play. I watch it like somebody would watch basketball, right? So I've kind of kept up with kind of the modern CS because it's just, I like doing it. I like watching it.
It must also have an extra appeal for you because, like, look, there's a lot of casual people can enjoy it, but you obviously have the grounding in the game. And I always tell people, it's actually, I often compare it to basketball because, look, even if the rules change, people can do different things. There are certain concepts like a pick and roll that will always exist in basketball. It just fundamentally works with how the game works. So it's the same in Counter-Strike. There's certain concepts of how you hold angles or you play off each other. They're just evergreen, right? They still exist from your day to today.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the things, I mean, they still, on Inferno, they call it Banana. I mean, that was, we tabbed it in our game when we played, we called it Banana. I mean, I don't think we made it up, but in 1.6, everybody was calling it Banana. I mean, if Prodigy was still played today, there was a room called the CK3 room, which the reason we called it that is when we played CK3 for the first time, they had three guys in there. The second you walked in, it would be like a Kevlar fireworks show. They would just headshot you. And we just called it the CK3 room, right? And they were very slow at playing Counter-Strike, so, you know, we would call it. And then obviously you've got the Moto box and things like that. So a lot of the things are kind of shared from today, a lot of the strategies and stuff. The only difference, obviously, is no skyboxes. Nobody ever lined up grenades. Like, there was no lining up of grenades. There was no Molotov, which has kind of changed things quite a bit in the pace of Counter-Strike and stuff. So, and there were no set rules. Like, a lot of the rules people, you know, you've got your entry, you've got your lurk and your primary opera and stuff. That stuff didn't exist then. So a lot of the things have changed. But watching it, you kind of say like, oh man, they're so, like, my son's like, how are they so good? And I'm just like, yeah, I mean, they practice, they play a lot. They've got a lot of aim. And you forget, like, you were that good at some points in time. Like, when I played early on, you know, you always say, like, you know, how's this person that good? I'm like, well, like, just practice. You just played. It just came naturally to you. You're just good because that's the way the cards fell. But, yeah, a lot of the stuff's the same. But it's interesting because I see my son watch it and stuff, and he's just like, oh, that's amazing. And obviously, when I watch it, I'm like, that's really hard to do. Like, just that's not easy. That's not easy.
Are you someone, like, I know a lot of people, if they came from the era when there wasn't the salaries and there wasn't much money to be made, some people actually feel either, like, some of them are bitter. Some people just do the what if, oh, if I'd have waited 5 years, you know, maybe I could have had, like, a career. Maybe we are, like you say, no one had led the path yet. There wasn't this money to be made.
Yeah.
How do you look back on it? Do you look back fondly? Do you sort of wish you were 10 years younger or something? What's your
take on these parts? Yeah, I mean, I never envisioned it as like a career. So like, I don't look back and wish. I mean, the only regrets I had maybe is getting kicked for being toxic from PAG before that 2001 Winter CPL. And then I have to join X3 because there were no teams like that I could join that I could play with. And that was like the best I was playing Counter-Strike was in PAG. They kicked me from that team. I had the opportunity to join the RS team that went to WCG, where it was Immortal, Warsaw, Trig, and a couple of other players, where LNG won that World Cyber Games. I had an opportunity. They told me to go, but I didn't have a passport, so I couldn't go to that event. So then I was just like, okay, I have to find a team to join. Ronald said,
I see what you mean. So there's a couple of times you sort of zigged when you should have zagged and you could have had like a better opportunity.
And
right.
That's where like the regret is. One is I don't regret like not like winning a tournament or something. Right. I regret being an asshole to my team and getting kicked. Because like when PAG went to that tournament, they got knocked out in the first round.
Yes.
So it was just like, you know. So like I regret those things, but you know, I never envisioned it as a career. The only thing like I kind of just look back on, I'm like, damn, I wish Twitch was out because like I would have been streaming.
Oh, your and, style like, would have been super RS, popular, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody in RS had like a good, like good attitude. They were just friendly to be around. They weren't like, you know, usually when you meet a top player, like they're not very talkative. They're not the best streamers. They never turn into the best streamers, right?
Oh, no, by the way, the reason your team would have been good is when I used to watch those POVs, I always told people, the European ones, everyone used voice comms and they spoke Swedish or German anyway. Obviously, everyone in your team recorded with the in-game voice thing, and that was half the enjoyment of watching the VOD. People just joking around, saying stupid shit, complaining. Yeah. That was like part of the banter, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, that's the only thing I'm just like, man, if Twitch was out earlier, we would be streaming.
Yeah.
We all had like pretty personalities. We could probably make it as a streamer and stuff, but... That's kind of the only thing. We were just early. Like I said, we're like the Will Chamberlains. We were like there before TV was there to kind of show you how good players were. But I mean, obviously people get better, kids get younger, and you start seeing, you know, Donk, right?
Sure.
You see Donk, and then you see like, you know, other people aging out that were used to be good and stuff. So the Counter-Strike's way better. People are just way better now than we ever were at some point, just strictly because they saw us or they saw a version of us at some point and, you know, they got better.
Thing is, though, one thing I'll say that is cool about your era, though, is unironically, once esports gets big enough, and actually since Counter-Strike still endures as a game, some of these names have like extra value than if they were in like Quake or something. You did play like the best players of all time, and even some of the fuckers like Fatality, like that is like having played with Wilt Chamberlain or something. Like, not many people have that story, so it's kind of cool in esports you have these stories, right?
Yeah, I mean, I tell people we live in a time where Tiger Woods, Roger Federer, like all these people, and then you've got Fatality and you've got all these teams, like all the best. We got to see the best of the best like in our era. So yeah, I mean, it's fun kind of to go back and reminisce, because I mean, I talk to people all the time who are from the old school time, and we kind of reminisce about all the different lands we went to and the things we did. You know, I always tell people, like, going to an event back in the day, like a phrase I would always use with iSalmon is like, I felt like I was battling the game engine and my computer more than I was the other team.
Right.
Like, I didn't care who I played, but I was just like, I had to make sure the settings were right, because back then, like, there was no raw mouse input. You had to install a config file to remove mouse
measure it,
from
all
Windows.
That shit. Yeah, sure.
There was no 100,000 polling rate.
Yep.
There was no 144 hertz monitor. You played on like a CRT, which went up to like 100. You played on ballroom tables that had nails in them with cloth laid over the top. You didn't have, you know, secret lab chairs. You played on these old carpeted ballroom chairs. And no matter where you went, you were playing on, I mean, the computers were all right, but you had to deal with like somebody installed Logitech software. You need to uninstall it. You need to, like, we had a lot, and we had ball mice. Like, early on, people forget, we played on ball mice.
Yes.
So before we started a game, we opened the mouse up, we cleaned the lint roller, we had alcohol and everything to remove the lint and stuff. And we didn't have like all these mouse pads that everybody had. I mean, we had rat pads, which was just a hard pad and a funk pad. We had like three mouse pads. We had the super mat, which was basically a huge cloth pad that wasn't even supposed to be a mouse pad. You have you're supposed to use it to put your printer on top of it or something like that.
I always saw Fatality Law came out. That was genius. You took a cheap, like, Walmart printer pattern and you made kids go, oh my God, for $25. And I told you, that's actually the most genius, like snake oil sale of all time.
So it's just like, you didn't have practice rooms. When you went to the event, you had like 15 minutes to set everything up, get everything ready.
Oh, there was no practice PC.
Play.
Yeah, if you didn't have a BYOC, you were shit out of luck. Yeah.
And there were tons of games where I'm like, I don't think Mouse Excel's off and I have to play.
Right.
I don't think, you know, my hurts aren't right. Like, we just have to go. Like, when I subbed in for Rambo in X3 for one game, it was because he had a problem with his mouse where it wasn't like something was wrong with the sensor or something and he couldn't play and he couldn't find somebody who had another one because we're all kids and we're all cheap. Right. And there was no mouse that he had with the same stuff. So, I mean, we had to fight a lot of things. These kids now don't have to do that. I mean, we don't get practice rooms. They get amazing computers. Like, they complain about the computers at a tournament. Gosh. They replace the computers at the tournament.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't happen.
No, that's wild.
That didn't happen. So we had a lot of things. And, like, no map pool. That was, like, another thing, too. So,
by the way, one thing you're making me remember that even I'd forgotten was because in this era, unless, I mean, especially we were talking about the era even before there was Team 3D, which was the first sponsored team. When there was no sponsored teams, like you said about Rambo, bro, even top players might not have like 100 FPS. They might have like some janky setup, like you're saying, like they might have to play on like the smallest resolution with the worst graphics and all the smoke. This is true. Even professional players wouldn't have this, right?
Yeah, he was nerfed. I mean, when we had BYOC lands, Rambo was nerfed. He was playing like probably at like 80% capacity because back then when you had a crappy computer, when we moved to like 1.6 from a stationary processor to the new processor that kind of expanded and moved, it would expand and move more slowly if you had low FPS, right? And then the recoil would be different. So, you know, one of the things is like CK3 would always dangle the carrot to Ronald because like they're like, we'll give you a computer, we'll help pay for your internet, just join us, right? That was like a big thing because CK3 at the time, kind of before the younger guys, they had Big V and Dorn and all these older people, they all had jobs. They all worked at Dell. They had like back then, they had experimental video cards that were from the Dell, like, you know, from the Dell labs that they would just toss or something. And they had really good computers and had really good internet. And the joke was like, we would always lose to them online. We made it to all the finals. We would go to like RITD, which was 7-on-7, no friendly fire. We made it to the finals there in our first iteration of the league. Like RS just came out of nowhere and we played them and they had a guy with 18 ping. Back then, like 18 ping was like, you're playing on the server if you have 18 ping. So like hardware was a huge deal, especially for online. Online, it was like, if you didn't have a good computer, you didn't have good internet, you just weren't going to get good results. So we were always trash online. But then when we got to the tournaments, we could play on, you know, computers that were better than ours. And it would just be much better. But yeah, you were always fighting the hardware and the environment more than the other people.
Another thing you mentioned that a lot of people don't know, because I always tell people the same story. I'm like a veteran now because I've done this like 23 years or something. But when I started, I was 18. And at the time, I was considered like the equivalent of like a 12-year-old kid now. Like like you're saying, because PC gaming was an expensive hobby. Like the internet costs money, especially DSL.
Yeah.
Fucking the PC costs like $2,000 back then. Like even back then, and by the way, $2,000 was a lot more money back then than it is now. Like it was so cost prohibitive. I was like one of the rare younger guys actually. Like you say, I would have said the average age of a CS player was like 26 or something, mate. Like you had to have a job and a life. So in your case, you were one of the younger guys, right? I think I even remember Big Dog even saying back in the day, it was someone like you, it was you guys were like the young crew who at the CPLs or whatever, you'd be like running around the BYOC at night while all these guys are fucking off in bed or whatever, right?
Yeah, we didn't have a hotel room. So at the first few CPLs, we didn't get a hotel room. We would sleep underneath the table in the BYOC, but we would just bring our pillows and stuff and we would sleep them. And one infamous thing we did is we all brought like cereal and a bunch of food. So when everybody was asleep, we would have a food fight at night. And then when the organizers would come over in the morning, there'd be like cereals and, you know, all sorts of stuff laying all over the floor because we were kids. Like we literally were kids. We would the only computer hardware we would get, like our parents would give us some stuff. And the only good computer hardware we would get is in the earlier CPLs. They would give away like Logitech Wingman mice. They would give away GeForce cards and stuff.
Right.
Or you would win them by winning the tournament. So like in the earlier iterations of the CPL, we won all the tournaments because they had a 5v5, a 3v3, a 1v1 off. We would win all of those. And when you would win them, you would win a Sound Blaster Live card or you would win a TNT Ultra or something like that. And we would use those to help us play. And that's just basically what it is. And it helped that we were in like, our parents were like not like super well off, but like well enough to where they can buy us computers, right? They would buy us computers and things of that nature. So we were a bit lucky in that area. And our internet was getting better in the area, way better than other areas, because we had DSL earlier than other places too.
Ah, right.
So, yeah.
By the way, let me ask you a few old questions, as you seem to have a pretty good memory. Like, I'll tell you one, which is because of the way name value works. I'll give you the analogy first before I give you the question, right? Which goes like this. So when you had the famous combos of K-Sharp and Rambo and Heaton and Potty, if people don't know, I actually always thought that Potty was better than Heaton. It's just Heaton had the fucking, he had the style, the spray style. He was this fucking bombastic character. He did the 1v5. So he kind of just got the marketing, right? Now he's a mega player, but I always thought Potty was the better player. I always thought it was the same thing with K-Sharp and Rambo. K-Sharp, I can tell you, by the way, I even saw lots of his like private demos. I was a friend of his. He had unbelievable skill, mate. He might have been like the fucking best player skilled-wise, but I always thought Rambo was the better player. Like, if you put Rambo in a match, he's a killer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, the analogy, like, I was actually thinking about that when you said it, make an analogy. Like, K-Sharp is like LeBron James, and Rambo would be like Kobe. So, right. Like, the difference is, Kobe just, the Mamba, man, he is a killer. Like, he will... If you're his best friend and you're on the opposite team, he would probably clock you to win.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like Rambo. Rambo was very like focused. He wanted to win. He wanted to do anything they could win. Practice like crazy. Did as much as he could. And then K-Sharp, he's just nice. Like, you know, LeBron James obviously is awesome too, but he doesn't have that Mamba mentality, sure. Right? That's the thing when they compare him to Jordan. Yes. Jordan just had that killer mentality. Like, who did Jordan dunk on? Everyone. Jordan dunked on everyone. It didn't matter who you were. So, I mean, that's kind of the analogy that I would give is Kyle was, like I said, he was nice, super nice. There was a match where he sat and made excuses to the team when Pag was playing X3 so that we could win. Like, literally, that's fucking how nice hell. He was. That was so okay. Nice. That's how nice he was. That's how nice he was, like, to give us a better chance, right? And I always felt that's the way he played sometimes. I felt like he didn't, like, push himself to – it's kind of like – I think the more recent analogy is like when Apex told Zywoo, like, if you don't play like Zywoo with this major, we're going to lose.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like Kyle's kind of the same way. Like, if you're not going to take over, we're going to lose. Like, you have to do it. And that's where, like, you could see him explode on NiP, where that infamous demo on NiP, where he just destroyed people. Like, he needed the push. He wasn't like the natural killer, like the Mamba, but he had all the tools you needed to be the best, right? Yes. When he wanted to focus and be the best, he was the best. And that's the way it was at that time, right? At that time, he was. But Ronald was consistency. He didn't need a push. His push is he wanted to win, and that was it. Like, that's all that mattered.
And then I always ask this question because, unfortunately, since a lot of the really old school X3 players didn't play that much longer, right? Big Dog, sadly, is only famous for that NiP game where they smashed his head in with Potty. And I always tell people, one, Potty might have had the best, like, first bullet aim ever, by the way. And then two, this, as you say, the reason that game was actually shocking isn't that Big Dog sucked. It's that no one had ever done that to him. He actually was a really fucking good player, right?
Yeah, I remember that tournament. He was playing really well up until, like, the match before and that match, like, right. He was playing super well. Like, he's the kind of guy where you don't have to worry about him playing bad. Like, you just never have to worry about him playing bad. He would always just play good whenever he played. But in that tournament trailing towards the finals, he started to play not as good. And I don't know if it's just because the competition cranked up, the pressure cranked up or whatever, but I mean, he was always super consistent. I mean, it's just Mr. Consistency. He's always going to give you the double-double, right? But at some point, he just didn't. And that might have been the difference, right? Like, you just, like I said, if you've never seen anything like that before and you've never experienced your equal because you're just rolling everybody that you play, it's going to be different and things change. I remember they lost that match, right? They needed to, like, defuse the bomb or something. I remember because it was like Dustin and somebody else had to drop down from the rafters. It was like 2v2 or something like that. I can't remember. But they dropped in from the rafters and defused the bomb and they needed that to, like, tie the game. But they just rushed it. Like, they just, oh, I got to go do it. I got to do it. And, like, that's the difference between, okay, let's not rush it. Like, let's drop and check and do it. And if you've never been put in that situation before, like, in high pressure, you can't be expected to kind of compete on the level that you need to. And I'm sure, I mean, NiP, I remember, like, back then, they'd played all sorts of teams that were, like, amazing back then. Like, all the European teams were amazing. They had all those, like, old school, like, CPL European lands that they had that they probably went to all over the place. So they had just as much LAN experience as, you know, X3 did. They just had more competition, I think, which ultimately I think was the difference. Is they just played and were pushed more often than X3 was. X3 was just, they were head and shoulders above everybody else at the time. There was nobody better.
Who were the players in your era? Who do you think were, like, underrated people? Or they never had, like, the big pop. I mean, they didn't reach demos or something. Who were the people you always thought were legit?
Oh, man. I mean, like, so, like, players I played with, like, Crash, he was kind of a local player that we played with. He was on the same level as Rambo in the earlier Counter-Strikes. I mean, There was a situation, and he would only use MP5. That was like his thing. MP5. Okay. He wouldn't buy armor. He wouldn't buy nades. He would just buy MP5. He'd go out and two tap people. They'd die. I remember, you know, back in the day, we were playing CK3 in the finals, and he wasn't saying anything, and we were losing. And I look over at his screen, he had $16,000 in like a match, a finals match. I'm like, why do you have this? And he would never talk. He was like very, very quiet. Right. Never said anything. And I'm looking over, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, he's like, well, I only buy MP5. I'm like, I know you buy MP5, but you have money. Like, buy Ronald an AK. Buy me an op, and let's try to win. Like, I don't understand. And he'd be very quiet, and he would just wreck people. Warthaw was really good on the earlier Counter-Strike days. He was the IGL of RS from kind of inception. Obviously, iSalmon, I feel like iSalmon doesn't get enough credit for, like, how good he was. He was just incredible aim. He was, like, I remember because, like, when we were talking in the BOIFC with, like, different players, they're like, oh, yeah, we're worried about Ash. We're not worried about anybody else. Nice. We're worried about Ash, right? So, I mean, it's just that's just kind of the way it was. I mean, I didn't think that there were so many, like, amazing players. There were some players, I can't remember their names on W. I mean, obviously, Mikey on Method. Mikey was another player that just, like, he was just super solid, super consistent, like, very cerebral and very laid back. Like, I never saw that guy ever practice, and he just would always just wreck people. Jaguar was another one that, like, I kind of looked up to, have that kind of just crazy. I liked him because he would just talk smack. Like, yeah. He reminded me a little bit of myself. He would just say stuff to people. He would talk smack. He'd yell at lands and stuff. And then he would play well. Like, he would just play consistent. So, yeah, I mean, there were a lot of players. I'm trying to think of, like, Bombs. I know Bombs was really good. A lot of those West Coast guys, they were all just good. I remember they knocked us out of that tournament, the one that with Electric and Jaden and them. They beat us in Kabul. And I remember that match because, like, they waited until, like, 30 seconds were left on the clock every single round, and then they would rush us, and we'd be asleep. Like, I would be like, I can't watch this angle any longer.
Oh, it's the most boring map to play on CT ever, isn't it? Yeah, it's just so bad.
They would just explode on us. So there was a lot of West Coast guys that probably don't get enough. Mikey probably doesn't get as much credit. Volcano probably doesn't get as much credit. Sunman, he was amazing. There were a lot of amazing players on the teams that we played.
Were you a guy? I mean, it's alluded that you maybe were. Back then, another really weird thing is, I mean, bro, I could tell you some horror stories about CSGO, like some top players that never watched the other game team's demos, and they just let their in-game leader and coach do that. And I used to tell these guys, you don't know how much fucking money you're leaving on the table, you idiot. I said, if you looked at any sport like fucking NFL, every wide receiver watches all his routes and all the fucking defensive side. Yeah. Of course, it's just default because, so if you think it's bad now, bro, back in your era, almost no pro, it was actually a thing for fans to watch demos. Did you actually used to try and scout people or watch the opposition? Did you ever put any time into that?
I would watch the demos of other players just to see, like, you know, where is he standing? Where is he going? Right. Like, what's his pathing? And maybe if you can sneak a look at the radar, because the radar never really worked well in, like, old school demos and stuff, so you couldn't really get any, like, positioning from people. But then you just kind of looked at, like, their style and what they did. I was, like, I didn't really get, like, super tactical until we played CK3. When we played them, they had strats. Like, they had real strats. They would hold spots and angles and stuff. And that's when I was just like, okay, we got to do, like, CK3 stuff. Like, if we're going to win, we got to back our aim up with, like, some CK3 stuff. And yeah, I mean, watching demos and stuff was, like, it's something I did. I don't think anybody else, like, wasted time with it because everybody's just like, I'm just going to play. Who cares what they're doing? Like, I'm just going to shoot them. That was, like, the mentality of, like, even in, like, USCS today, like, outside of, like, maybe the top three teams, even if you see these other players on other teams, they're just not as committed, right? This is not as committed to do the necessary work. And, you know, I won't say I watched 1,000 demos, but I know I tried to watch demos because a lot of the strats that we had kind of in the Jaden and Grazzle kind of iteration of RS is we would take a strat from a demo I had watched from a professional team. So, like, we took a strat from Infinity Esports on Nuke, where they would just stack a bunch of flashes, one off the wall, one over the box, and with a nade to push them back. And we would just use it. We would drill the strat. We would get the strat. And in the game, I'd be like, IES, let's do the IES strat. Let's go. Another thing we saw, like, gamers online on Nuke, they would always go to the hut and they would shoot up to the first spawn would always go to the hut and shoot to the rafters with one bullet. And then everybody would pile through the door. So we would say, you know, Ash, take the gall shot and we'll follow through the door and the hut outside or something. So we would take strats from other teams like SK and things, and we would just call it. So we did watch the demos, and then we would just take the strats. Like, I always told Ash, like, we wanted to be an American team with a European style.
Right.
So we just watched European demos. We stole their strats, and we would just call them as kind of like our, you know, set default strats. And then we would just go dynamic if none of those were working. We would just have a pocket strat, and we would call it.
Because didn't you always think that was like, I always thought of someone who was a journalist as well, one of the most really unfair characterizations of the difference. They do it the same now. They always make it sound like Europe has everything and NA is just inferior. And I always used to tell people, bro, if anything, you're nailing it right now, because I knew people like Morto. I said, what NA doesn't have is they didn't have the team concept, or they didn't have the strats, or they didn't have the roles. Like, if you ever watched, NA had some amazing players. I mean, we talked about some of them. They had players that could have been the best player in the world, maybe were. It's just that for some reason, Americans were a bit more individualistic in CS.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think, I don't know if it's like the region, right? I feel like European players are just more reserved and they just listen when you tell them things. And US players are just young guns. Like, there were a lot of players back in the day that just thought they were good and they didn't need to listen and they could just outshoot. Right. And they didn't think about CS at the same level as somebody who could compete, which is why you only have like three or four. I mean, even today, you only have like three or four teams in the US that mean anything, right? Because, you know, some people take it seriously and put in the time and grind when there's nothing, you know, there's no money, there's no incentive, and they do it, and then they get to that point, right? And they're that good. And I just think, I don't know if it's like, you know, the way like the US is structured, like our government's different than their government, you know.
Right.
I don't know if it, like, you're just raised in a different culture. Obviously there's cultural differences, and I just think the European cultural difference is just, it's different. And the kids here, there's just not as much incentive. But CS died. Like, at some point in the US, CS died. I feel like after Complexity, like when they were in with Fraud, I felt like Counter-Strike died. Well, like, in Source, there was no, like, I don't even remember anything from that gap, right? And then it kind of started coming back to life, I guess, like later in Go. I don't even think early Go it came to life.
No, but it's weird, mate. Here's the difference that of your era to the CSGO onwards era is when we're talking about these CPLs and Europeans coming, Europe was the region with like the smaller lands and not as much money. And they came to the CPLs. That was like the major, essentially.
Yeah.
And so it the dynamic you're talking about, it flipped after the CGS period. Yeah, it became like essentially like it is now, like a European
game
jet
where lag.
The North American guy comes in. Yeah, it's the opposite. Yeah.
That was like another thing. That's how good they were. They would come, they would get jet lagged, they'd get acclimated, and then they would just wreck.
Yes.
It was a big deal when 3D had beaten like Gamers Online or whatever in the finals. Like, it was massive. It was like the first time we had just wrecked like so many European teams. Like, we'd won a tournament with Europeans there, right? That was a big deal. Yeah. I mean, Europe is just a different animal. I mean, even today, it's very heavily, like, you can't play good Counter-Strike unless you live in Europe, right? Like, that's where all
the
competition
is. You alluded to it earlier, but obviously, famously, except for people like 3D, and then later on, maybe like the Zexes, and I know Gamers X went to an ESWC. Yeah, there's a few people got to go to them. Is that, I guess that is one of your few regrets, you didn't get to go to one of the European events and see what that would have been like?
Yeah, we wanted to. Like, I wish that Jaden and Grazzle team had stayed together, because I felt like we had enough consistency to where we could do some damage. Like, we wanted to play, like, our big thing is we wanted to play SK on Dust. We felt like our Dust was like super good. We would always play like in the boot camp, we played Esports United on it. I mean, we lost every game, but we'd always play them tight on Dust. But when we played them at the Lethal Gamers Land, we just destroyed them at there. And we would always play everybody super tight on it. We were just really good at it. And we were hoping we would play them. We would have had to beat WEW at that tournament that we lost at to play them, because the next match was SK. And I felt like if we had played them on Dust or Dust 2, we would definitely have beaten them. But that's just me thinking it, right? I don't know if it's actually true, but I felt like that was our best chance. And we would, like I said, Ronald would just always beat us. We would always lose to X3 or 3D, and they would put us in the losers bracket, and then we would just have to fight our way back up. We'd have to play as many dogs as possible, because everybody didn't want to lose, because it was double limb, no best of double limb one match. And then you just have to be lucky that if you dropped to the losers bracket that you were playing a map that you were good on, right? So it was luck of the draw back then.
One thing as well, since you were someone who used the AWP, is another reason why actually a lot of people didn't AWP on LAN, is because, as we're talking about, if you're playing a BO1 with MR12 rules and you like lose the pistol, bro, you're only going to get like two or three AWPs in the whole game. Like, it's pretty big pressure to buy it in that setting, right? It's not the same as an online game.
Yeah, there's I mean, obviously, back in the day, like, the pistols were not as good as they are in CSGO. You could win with, like, you know, a 5-7.
Yes.
Like, you could give one guy, you give somebody like Rops a 5-7. He kills four people with guns. Like, that did not exist even with the Deeg. I mean, the Deeg was good because you had one Deeg, but it was almost as difficult as the Deeg is today, right? Like, it wasn't. But the USP was garbage. I'm trying to remember. They had, like, two other pistols. I can't remember the names of them. But, yeah, they were all garbage, right? Like, even the USP was garbage. And now the USP is, like, it's pretty good. Like, you could win some rounds if you've got some armor and stuff. But you lose that round, it's like 3-0 immediately, and then you have to win that gun round. I mean, it's almost like it is today, right? Like, you lose, you know, you lose the pistol, and then you've got to win the next gun round. Otherwise, you're just going to stack rounds, right? That's why it's like, it's MR12 is nice for CS2 because it makes the games kind of interesting because anybody could win, right? Like, if you win that round, you break the economy, you could turn it, right? Or the pistols are like super lethal. You've got people who are really good at pistol. You could just turn it. You couldn't do that in 1.6. You just couldn't. It wasn't like that at all. And utility use wasn't even close. It wasn't, you couldn't use a molly to push people off of positions, right? And if you drop the smoke, you have to make sure that your computer didn't suck.
Yes, because if you drop crash the smoke, your whole PC, yeah.
Yeah. And you could know, like, you would know, like, if there was a smoke on the other side of the map, because your FPS would drop. You're like, oh, they right. dropped smoke somewhere, right? Yes. Like, we had strats back then where we'd be like, okay, we know, like, he has a crappy computer. Just drop 3 smokes, and then we'll push around it or something, right? So it was a different animal.
One thing you referenced earlier, it's actually something I wish they had more of in CS, which is they did take out a lot of that Quake HL deathmatch type air movement, et cetera. And you couldn't do, like, yeah. Now, even the versions of what people do on the jump maps is like very limited to what you could do before. I always felt like that was a mistake because, like, look, maybe back then it was OP, but I think with how skilled people are now, in a way, the dodging element would be brilliant now. Like, I almost wish that was still in the game. You know what I mean? I bet if you boot up CS2 now, it does feel a lot slower as a game, right? Than the version you were playing back then.
Running in the mud.
Yes.
I mean, even from Go, like Go, I felt like was a little bit faster because the air movement was faster because you would see people kind of straight jump around corners and stuff after they take a shot with the op or something. But like Counter-Strike in 5.2, it was like you could play in a pub, you could strafe jump from your spawn to the enemy spawn. And if you're playing scrubs, you would literally be on like almost to the entrance of their spawn before they're done buying guns. I would buy guns like that and I would go and I would kill them. And back then you have to buy buy ammo individually. It didn't come in the gun, right? You have to literally buy the individual ammo. So you could, the save rounds were quite different then. It's like, okay, fine, I'll buy a Colt. I'll buy one clip, right? I'll buy one clip or something like that. So yeah, the strafe jumping is like way different. And plus the counter strafing wasn't like as big a deal back then, right? Counter strafing is huge now. You literally have to be dead still, or you have to counter strike perfectly to shoot the op accurately or the deagle or something like that. Back then you're strafing like Quake. You're sliding into the shot. Right, and you're killing people, or you've got back then you had a gun called the TMP, or you had like a MP5, and you would just strafe jump, strafe into it, and ding, 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 you'd kill like a bunch of people, and you'd keep going, right? And that's probably why, like, Chameleon, he hates it. Like, they changed it to like a slower game, but I didn't hate it. I felt like it made the game better. It made it more tactical, probably.
One thing you mentioned earlier that I can heavily relate to is one of the jokes of my career is actually the game now I am most associated with is Counter-Strike, because I was there the whole time. But I always tell people, I have almost the same story as you, mate. I used to play Quake and go to LANs, and I literally had the same story. Someone came in, and what would happen famously at the LANs I went to, like a local one, is if you played Quake online and the other guy just plays for fun on the weekend, you're too good. So what happens is when you beat them a million times, they go, oh, this is unfair because you guys play the game. So let's play something none of us have played because they think it's going to like reset the field, as it were. Now look, that didn't work because, spoiler, even if you install all these Half-Life mods, like, I'm just going to get good at it because I play the game load. But I get them, like, it gave them a moment where they felt like they could compete. And so famously, I remember someone bringing out Counter-Strike and we played it, and no joke, I can even vividly remember, like, you know, running like Quake and then some dickhead like with an MP5 behind a box, like the actual stereotype of a noob, shooting me in the back. And I remember going, this game's fucking shit, why are we playing this? And then the joke is, like, you know, the rest's history, and then like 23 years later I'm here still now, right? Did you also have similar vibe? Because if you came from Quake, like, actually early on CS was a bit like, isn't this a little bit for noobs and can't people camp a bit? So
yeah,
is it kind of wild that you actually put that many years in? That must be a bit surreal that like CS is your game.
It is. It was like, it was a lot, it was slower than Quake, obviously different, the guns were completely different, and I felt like what they made 1.6 to like narrow the gap, right? To narrow the gap between like the people who didn't know how to play and the people who knew how to play. They added some randomness to it. I felt like that's what they did to make it more playable on the release version, versus like we would just come from Quake and we could just strafe jump everywhere with the op and then quick zoom people, right? And it was in the beginning, like I said, we uninstalled it after version 3. I just didn't like it. It's just like playing COD after playing like Overwatch or something. It just was so foreign. But then like somebody downloaded it again after a few updates. Everybody started playing it. Everybody got bored of Quake and we just played it. I don't remember how it like got disseminated amongst everybody, but everybody just ended up playing it, and it was just fun. Like we would land it, we'd go to somebody's house, hook up a couple computers, and we would just play. But I mean, the pace is just completely different. Quake had like a weird kind of skill gap. Like you could be as good as you were within your land group, and you went to another land group, and there was just another level. Like, yes. If they were just better, they were just significantly better. I remember Frag 4, like, Rambo was amazing. We thought he was the best Quake player, but we went to Frag 4, and he played Machiavelli on land. Like, I'm like, oh, he wants to play and see how good he is. And he beat Rambo to negatives. Like, I was
right.
Just like,
right.
It Quake had a, like, insane skill gap between, like, the best and, yes. like, the middle or something. Or even in the top 10, it was insane how different it was. So, yeah, Counter-Strike, they did dumb it down a little bit. But I felt like making it more accessible brought in more players. It made things more interesting.
The funny thing is that when you were talking through all those issues, which often I have to have mentioned as trivia myself, like the fact that it was a set map for a set round of the bracket, like you say, it was BO1. By the way, the seedings were wonky as fuck because they're doing things trying to...
And they're auto-bursts.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out like...
Some teams got auto-bursts.
Like the worst ones always was like you say, they'd give someone who did well in Cal but were onliners like a good seed. And then you'd have some like brand new team from Europe that split apart before. So they don't have any history and they're getting like the 23rd seed. So like, that means if people don't follow that, you're going to think that that's good for the NA team. No, that actually means you could be like the seventh seed and you might just get drawn against some like killer team that no one knows is secretly mega because how the bracket works and then that's one life gone. And that because if I think of all the problems, the number one thing, if I could go back in a time machine, we should have changed is it should have just been a set map pool like we have now, like 6-7 maps. The only the real ones, get out Aztec, get out Prodigy, just all the real maps everyone knows. That would have made those events better, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. If you could prepare, like, I don't think they gave you the map pool
the
way the seating
so.
Was until
no.
close to the event. Like, so close to the event that you couldn't really prepare for it with
yes.
any amount of time. And, like, scrimming wasn't like in IRC, you could go to Find Scrim or SoPug or something like that, and you can get scrims and stuff. But, like, you didn't know what map you were playing. You just played. You just, like, whoever wants to play, you know, we look, you know, 5v5 Central, like, who wants to play? And then you would play. So I think if there was a bit more organization to it, we could have better prepared for things. I mean, if we could vote ban maps, you know, I would have permaban Train. I didn't mind playing Prodigy. I just didn't want to play Train. It's just, but yeah, I mean, there's just no consistency back then. It was just, like I said, luck of the draw. You would go to the tournament. You would have to either have, like, you would get an auto berth, right? Like, either you would get invited, right? Like, you would say, okay, like X3 would always get, like, number one seed berth or something. Or you would have to go to a pre-qual LAN. So RS would always go to the LANs. We'd win the qualifier, and then we would get seeded. And then back then, you had, like, I think it was 64 teams all the way up to 128 teams. That's how big, like, some of the CPLs were. And then it was just, like, a bunch of random teams and a bunch of the top 10 teams. And then they would seed everybody, and you would just pray that you weren't on the same side of the bracket as, like, X3 or something, so that you could win a couple matches, get warmed up by the time you played them. I think that's just kind of the way it is. You just hope that you weren't seated in like the doom side of the bracket because you only had two chances. That's it. You play bad. Your mouse doesn't work right. You get set up on a crappy computer. Like the margins were so thin back then. Everything had to go right for you to just do well and to play well.
Right. Obviously, it was cool. We went down all memory lane, a lot of different aspects. At the end of this interview, do you have like a message for people? Do you have anyone you want to thank or shout out if they're watching?
No, I mean, Counter-Strike, like, is a big part. I say it's a big part of my life because I played it for so long. Everybody I met is to Counter-Strike. I mean, I don't really have anything other than just, you know, for my kids, I always tell them, you know, don't be toxic. Listen to who's telling you what to do. Practice, play hard. You know, don't think you're better than somebody else. Because, like, when I grew up, it was just, like, talking smack, thinking I was better than everybody else. And then ultimately, at some point, you get kicked from a team. And then you learn, okay, you can't do any of that crap, right? I just say, just don't be toxic and, you know, try to be friends with everybody and learn as much as you can because it's a small window. Like, it's not like you think like it's going to last forever, right? You're not everybody's forest. Not everybody's forest where you can just play for like 20 years through like five versions of Counter-Strike or something. So yeah, it's a small window. You just have to enjoy it as much as you can.
Everyone needs a support network. And mine is, of course, my Patreon community, the Scrominati, who in many ways, they're the Sonny to my share, saying, I got you, babe. So this video and all the others on my channel were kindly supported by the following names. Ahmed Haju, Mac Pugnaccio Rakula, Adam Tomlin, Animosity, Jensen Gore, Tosh, Toucan, and you know it. Jerky's Minion, my main man, always going to be referenced, one of the best patrons of all time. Would you like to ask a question in my AMA? Maybe you want to suggest a topic or a guest to see on my channel? Do you want teasers? Find out who the upcoming Reflections and Talk to Thor interviews are. Maybe you want to do one of those long discussions where you get to set the topics we talk about. Well, if any of these or others appeal to you, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Scrominati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.